Hello, friends. Welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and I am at the helm of what I'm sure you're all aware of by now is the third foot, which we pop out into the world once a month. It's kind of like this podcast's equivalent of flying Ant Day, except instead of that happening inexplicably one day in the summertime, once a month, the trivia and arcana seeps out from the cracks in this podcast's pavement and flies about into your eyes until you go, disgusting, but what a wonder of nature. And
I think you've managed to make the term bonus episode somehow less appealing.
I'll be honest, that was an insight into the way my mind works, which is pretty much, there's an image, let's latch onto that until we get to the end of it and hope that I haven't done too much damage.
Ben's inner monologue is seeping through, I think, the cracks at the moment as well.
Yeah, some people often just have monkeys on unicycle smashing cymbals as their default mental state. Mine is apparently a horrendous face full of ants. Yeah. And with me is my own aunt. It's Auntie Barry, everyone.
Feeling very antibacterial myself at the moment.
Yeah, after 22 months, finally, ladies and gentlemen, one of us got COVID.
Should say antiviral, really, shouldn't I? Yeah, I've got, I'm recording this in my bed. It's the second time in the history of the show that we've recorded, one of us has recorded the episode from their bed. We recorded our episode about nursery rhymes with you, I think, staying in your parents' house. You had to hide under the duvet in the spare room.
Yeah. And I should point out my parents are very religious and believe podcasts to be the work of Satan. So yeah. I had to hide from them. They were like, Diana, he's podcasting again. Fetch the birch.
Tell him it'll make him go blind. I am a few days into COVID isolation. The inevitable result of doing an immersive theatre job for the last 3 months.
Yeah, honestly, statistically, it's incredible that it's taken this long for you to get it.
Yeah. Also, I'm feeling miserable but fine. All my vaccines are doing their work. If you haven't had yours yet, go get them.
Yep. 100% this. This is not a podcast that endorses anti-vax. I was going to say philosophy, but that gives it more credit than it deserves.
You hear us now, Joe Rogan. You're not welcome on our podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I am going to remove all of the podcast from Spotify in protest at Joe Rogan, just like Neil Young's done. When I read that news story, I was like, good on you, Neil Young, but also, I don't want everyone to follow suit, otherwise that's going to really compromise my decision to clear out all of my CDs from 3 years ago. Anyway, to business. That is not the news story of the month that has inspired this month's edition of The Third Foot. It is doings at number 10 Downing Street, as I know every single British person will be aware, and I imagine anyone else from around the world currently snickering behind their palms at our clown car of a country.
Oh God, you've described it as a clown car, which suggests there's an infinite amount of these idiots that could come screaming forward at any point.
That is absolutely how I feel about our government and the party that occupies it. If you're not aware, during lockdown one, the most stringent and terrifying time of lockdowns in the past 2 years, when we had to socially distance, when we were not allowed near friends and family, when people made sacrifices of missing birthday parties, weddings, funerals, the comforting of loved ones.
Singing was banned.
My job, stand-up comedy, was illegal. Barry's job, being professionally Irish, was as illegal as it's ever been in this country, honestly.
Yes, it's never been more illegal to be Irish in this country.
At all that time, essentially, our Prime Minister turned his house into the Copacabana. I was about to say, as a nation, we are all furious. Like, bafflingly, about 33% of the electorate are still like, oh, that lying hypocrite. Ah, it's fine. Like, you know, my son knows him from Oxford. If this were a reasonable functioning country, it'd be tar, feather, pitchforks, heads on spikes time. But because we're British, it's still sort of gently tutting behind a copy of The Guardian time and waiting 2 years till we can maybe elect them out unless they've gerrymandered our country to hell.
I mean, I just want to pull you up on there. If it was the Copacabana, someone would have shot him down, which, alas, never happened.
Sorry, there's a shooting in the Copacabana.
Oh, yeah. Barry Manilow, some really hard-hitting social realism.
I'll be honest, I've never paid close attention to the lyrics.
No, to be fair, the usual reaction to hearing Barry Manilow come on the radio is to immediately fling the radio out of the nearest window. So,
well, I was going to say that I can't make out the lyrics because the blood filling my ears somewhat obscures them.
Lyrics of Copacabana aside, multiple parties and gatherings which were definitely illegal under COVID rules at the time were held inside number 10 Downing Street involving cake, wine, and frequent attendance by the Prime Minister, which he has yet to confirm or deny because there is currently an inquiry taking place over here, but you'd think the man would remember a birthday party, but then he can't remember how many children he has. So anyway, what have you looked at this month for us, Ben?
This month, I've looked at the history of impotent fury. This month, I've looked at the history of parties.
Can I let the listeners know that Ben initially texted me saying he was going to look at secret parties, and unsurprisingly told me before we started recording he couldn't find any information on secret parties, the clue being in the title.
Honestly, you'd have thought that historians would have put some effort in, but apparently the source record is keeping its secrets close to its chest.
You're saying there's a PhD out there waiting to be written on the history of secret parties.
Or a PhD on the history of secrets. Or, and then, you know, when the people who are marking go, can I see it? You just go, no. And they go, very good, have a first.
Yes.
So the first thing I'm going to look at, obviously we know about Bacchanalia, the Roman festival of drunkenness. I'm sure there are festivals of drunkenness in various different cultures, but the one that I found is from the very, very ancient inhabitants of the Nile River Valley. And this is something going back tens of centuries in BCE, all the way to the reign of Hatshepsut. And this is thanks to archaeological research in Luxor at the Temple of Mut, which I presume is just down from the Temple of Dick Dastardly. And it was all inspired by a warrior goddess named Sekhmet, and I like Sekhmet a lot. She was the daughter of Ra, the god of lions, and she...
Ben is enjoying a punny romp through all of the Egyptian gods right now.
It's an absolute root one, but I very much enjoy it as a joke. If I casually use the word monster whilst in a room with my 17-month-old daughter, I'll just hear a little rah from the corner. And it is adorable.
You decided not to raise her Jewish or Presbyterian, but instead worshipping the Egyptian gods.
Yes. We've decided to raise her hieroglyphic.
Yeah.
Sekhmet was said to breathe fire, and she was believed to cause plagues. And the story goes about the end of Ra's rule on Earth. And Ra sent the goddess Hathor in the form of Sekhmet, I presume false mustaches and ears were involved, to destroy any mortals who conspired against him. And in this myth, Sekhmet's bloodlust was not quenched at the end of battle, and that led to her destroying almost all of humanity. And in order to stop her, Ra poured out beer that had been dyed with red ochre so that it resembled blood. And she then mistook this beer for blood and became so drunk that she forgot about the slaughter and returned peacefully to the realm of gods.
Oh, great.
And so to celebrate that, there was a festival of drunkenness in very ancient Egypt.
Nice.
Staying in the ancient world, I looked at your friend and mine, Emperor Nero.
Ah, yes.
Who threw quite the number of horrific parties.
Ah, Nero's gaff parties, absolutely the place to be.
Nero's house party is a frat movie waiting to happen, isn't it? It's the original Animal House.
Claudia's showing up with a six-pack of Christians.
Yeah. Or to give it its full title, Animal Sacrifice House. His place was known as the Domus Aurea, or literally the Golden House. Architecturally, it sounded remarkable. It had a chonatio rotunda, literally a rotating dining room.
Like one of those ones at the top of the mountains in Switzerland.
Yeah, I can't work out whether it means that, or the entire room is a lazy Susan, or it's just kind of like dinner is always served and it's the guests that rotate in and out of the seats.
Or you just get them drunk enough that the room is spinning anyway.
Yes. It's a remarkable place. It was, you know, the ceiling was bedecked with jewels and incredible frescoes. Well, it was destroyed slash hidden away when Nero was deposed, and a lot of Rome went, oh, he a bad guy. We don't want the world to know about him. But over the centuries, many, many famous artists, particularly in the Renaissance, went and found it. So Raphael and Michelangelo crawled underground, and they went there to study the paintings found within. There's all sorts of graffiti down there. There are also the signatures of later tourists. Now, there's some people that I've not heard of, moderately famous Renaissance painters like Ghirlandaio, Van Heemskerk and Lippi. But my two favourite signatures, if I was to tell you that two very famous figures from history broke into Nero's forbidden golden house full of jewels and saucy frescoes and left their mark there, who do you think they would be?
Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, they were trying to manoeuvre a grand piano into there.
Byron and Shelley.
Right sort of thoughts, but wrong nationality.
Voltaire and the Marquis de Sade.
Marquis de Sade is one of them.
Oh, wow. Oh, get me.
And the other one is Casanova.
Oh, nice. What were they up to in there?
No, I'm not saying they were in there together.
Listen, one historical Lothario going into this underground place on their own would seem like, you know, nothing at all. Two of them, massive coincidence, was definitely like a secret brothel.
Oh, no, I thought you were going to suggest that they were having a date together. The Marquis de Sade was banging Casanova till his ears fell off. Who knows? Could have done. I don't even know if the timelines match up. But that's. I tell you what. That's a Doctor Who episode I want to see. The doctor walking in on Casanova going down on the Marquis de Sade.
Their lives did overlap, so it's not completely unfeasible. Okay.
Casanova always reminds me of the marvelous Terry Pratchett joke where there is in his world, the Casanova character is a dwarf and so is called Casanunda. And there might be a joke about, you're so large, I'd have to go up on you. But I... Anyway, talking of a delight, Nero's parties. You might know some of the infamous, horrible things that he did. What made this ring awfully true with what's going on now? He partied while the Roman people were going through famine. So not that we're starving right now, but, you know, inflation, standard of living quite tricky, and plague ravaging the land. While that happened, the rich and the powerful of Rome are cavorting across 300 acres next to the Golden House, which had an artificial lake, cattle pastures, beautiful manicured gardens, and also stakes with Christians nailed upside down, smeared with wax, and set on fire.
Like the ancient historical version of citronella candles.
Yeah.
Christianella. This is the, like, the fiddling while Rome burns thing isn't literally while the city was on fire and Nero was playing his fiddle. It's kind of this whole era of decadence around the time when the city was struggling.
Yeah. There's not that many sources about what happened at the parties because, A, secret parties, and B, the civil servants serving under Nero were much more discreet than those serving under Boris Johnson. And there haven't been any leaks. But currently another thing he liked to do, Nero would cover himself with the skin of a wild animal and have men and women tied to posts for him to ravage in the guise of a wild beast.
He's just lucky that he didn't have Domus Cummings working for him, who was able to distribute his, you know, his monthly tablets with all of the latest salacious gossip.
Very nice. When we think of modern hedonists and parties, of course, we think of Louis XIV and Versailles.
I'm sorry, I love that our version of modern is a king who died in 1714.
Okay, early modern.
Hey kids, you know who's house parties you want to go to these days? That's right, it's Erasmus Darwin. And to be fair, Erasmus Darwin would have really cool parties.
He absolutely would. Listen, I could have phrased that better. Thank you for picking me up on it. I like to think of myself as contemporaneous with the early modern / early Enlightenment period.
We're down with the kids, if by kids you mean the early modern ancestors of the modern day goat.
Yeah. We're down by the kids, if by kids you mean Parisian street urchins. Louis XIV, as you may be aware, rich guy, bit of a dick, knew how to put on a show. He put on between May the 7th and May the 13th in 1664, The Pleasures of the Enchanted Island. Now listen, I am furious about this because my birthday is May the 14th. And I hate the fact that that was when he was clearly recovering in the hangover from hell. He dedicated his festivities to his mum and his wife. Basically, that was a smokescreen because everyone at the time was going, this is really a party in honour of your mistress, isn't it?
Ooh.
Yeah, how very Gaulish. So the theme of the entire festival and party was a story that I don't really know about, but it's clearly a famous French one, Alcine and Roger, written partially by Molière, who was, if you don't know, is basically France's answer to Shakespeare, and Lully, who I believe is France's answer to Gillian Anderson in The X-Files. Alcine was a seductive and powerful sorceress, and she uses her powers to bewitch warriors who she keeps prisoner on her enchanted island. And amongst them are Roger and his brave knights. Again, let's not kink shame even fictional people. So let me take you through this party. Day one, Louis dresses up as Roger and leads a procession of knights, drummers, trumpeters and heralds down the Allée Royale, or Royal Alley, to what is now known as...
I'm going to lead you down the Royal Alley, sounds very saucy.
That's what he said to Louise, to what is now known as the Bassin d'Apollon, which is French for Apollo's sink. Sorry, no, it's not. It's French for Apollo's bassoon. I don't quite understand the translation there. Back then, Alcide's enchanted palace was set up, and it's the etchings I've seen online do look remarkable, and I'm going to say that is the oldest I have ever sounded. The etchings are remarkable, he said, hearing the reaper sharpening his scythe. The peak of the procession was a golden chariot, 24 foot long, 18 foot high, pulled by four horses, which displayed all sorts of mythological people.
He's got a stretched double-decker chariot.
Now you're talking. Yes, he does.
You say displaying all these people, were they like embossed on the chariot, or were they like people, like actors in costumes doing street theatre pretending to be his heroic figures, or?
I'm not sure. I think in my mind it's the latter, but I could be wrong.
That's a hell of a gig for your agent to get you.
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's basically the parade at Disney World at midday, isn't it?
Still, though, it's 5 days, presumably bed and board at Versailles. It's great exposure.
Yeah, that's a good point. You'd expect they pay equity minimum.
No. Egalité minimum.
Very good. Once this was finished, there was a show of horsemanship in which each knight would use his lance to try and dislodge bags of rice hanging from a post.
So sorry, but that is quite lame.
It is quite, I don't know, maybe you had to be there. Maybe they
health and safety said no to jousting, so they had to have bags of rice instead of human opponents.
Yeah, I think it would have been funny if they'd have been dislodging bags of curry, or maybe, you know, like five of the bags were rice and one of the bags was curry.
Five of the bags were rice, one of the bags was anthrax.
Yeah.
French roulette, we call it.
Yeah.
Or roulette, as we say in France.
As night fell, there was a huge candlelit parade, and the entire company of toffs...
I've got hiccups. Ben has laughed himself into a state of hiccups, it would seem.
So as night fell over the gardens, there was a huge sort of torchlit parade, and all the toffs sat down for dinner. And after dinner, they watched the ballet. And the ballet's company did not just contain humans. There was also an elephant and a camel and a bear. So for some reason, they watched Fantasia. I can only presume that a hippopotamus and a crocodile turned up later.
Yeah, amazing.
So, day two, comedy...
That's just day one!
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell.
Day two, there was a comedy ballet. Louis XIV, still in the role of Roger. So already, in my mind, this is the highest production value piece of LARPing I have ever heard about.
Yeah.
He showed the court a stage set up in the gardens where there were shepherds and shepherdesses surrounded by fauns dancing to music of flutes and violins. I mean, I'll be honest, if fauns have turned up, then orgy is definitely happening.
Yeah.
That was like a pretend orgy followed by a real orgy.
Do you think day one was the day where his mother and his wife were there, and then he said, I hope you enjoyed the party, sent them packing to another palace, and then said, now the next 4 days is just for Louis.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed day one of my 1 day party. Following that, on day three, there were fireworks, and also in the waters there, the character of Alcine was carried over the waters by an artificial whale and its two calves, which I'm going to say is quite a coup de théâtre. And that seems to take up a lot of the day. Day four and five, it gets even more ridiculous. There are horse races. There is a promenade of a menagerie of every exotic animal that they were able to get to France. An amusement park was set up all around the garden and the chateau that they could enjoy.
Nice.
And then Molière comes into his own on day seven, because after all of this, Molière goes, I've prepared an item, and the item is Tartuffe.
Oh, cool. So this is like after the official thing had finished, a couple of days later, the hangover's wearing off, and Molière goes, BT dubs, one of the great works of French literature.
Absolutely. And obviously, Tartuffe is brilliant, but like quite controversial, like mocking piety and religiosity. I mean, admittedly, after a 6 day bender from Louis XIV, he could probably get away with it. The final day, so it's a bit like Glastonbury, isn't it? There's the festival main, and then there is like a day or two afterwards where people are just hanging around, foraging through the tents, seeing what what bits of minesweeping they can do. And then at the end, there was another comedy ballet called Le Mariage Forcé, The Forced Marriage.
I don't know, though. Day eight, at that point, you're like, oh, do we really need to watch another fucking ballet?
There is that. There is that.
We've booked the elephants. We may as well use them. The tutu was very expensive to make. We've got to get the best use out of it.
Do you know how hard it is for an elephant to stand on point?
Yeah, exactly.
I've got two more parties to tell you about.
Fine.
First of all, we are going to go to 1924. This, I think, will remind you of our friends the Futurists from Italy. Count Etienne de Beaumont and his wife Edith, who in 1924 threw an automotive ball. It was a masquerade ball at their mansion on the Rue du Roc in Paris. The theme was that guests had to dress up as a car.
Ladies and gentlemen, the first guest, Monsieur Optimus Prime.
I mean, one would hope that every single set of guests had to have a man in walking in front of them with a red flag as well. You know, I've been to a London Underground party where you have to dress up as a London Underground station. You know, there's one shepherd's bush surrounded by 15 cockfosters. It's wonderful.
It sounds like we're recording this the day that the British comedy great Barry Cryer died. He appeared on the radio show, I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue, where they regularly did rounds where they would announce the late arrivals at a particular ball. It would all be punny names. So the late arrivals at the dress as a car ball, you have, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Mini Driver, Chevy Chase. Ford Prefect.
Yeah. Oh, that's tremendous.
Yeah. That's great. I'm also just suddenly tweaking that, of course, this is the 20s, when all cars looked like those cars from the 20s. So it's not like they're coming as like slick looking Ferraris or Minis and things like
no,
that.
No, not at all. Honestly, I've got a picture of the Count and his wife, and he honestly looks like the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz. Listen, they're very rich people, so they can do it on earth they want. But my favourite bit is throughout the banquet, costumed performers would run in making car noises and acting out vignettes about various vehicles.
Did people arrive at this event in their own cars?
Oh my gosh, that never occurred to me.
Because if some people are arriving on foot and some people are arriving in their own cars, then the valets have a very confusing time determining who goes what direction when they arrive at the front gate.
Do you reckon there's like, there was a few people who were dressed so convincingly they just ended up in the parking lot and were like, party is terrible.
Some husband like hands his wife over to the valet going, it's not a scratch on her, you hear?
Can you imagine if someone like tried to be a bit clever and turned up as a tram or a bus and they were like, no, no public transport, welcome.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess like it's I understand why they went for it because cars were the epitome of modernity then. But it's the equivalent of you and me hosting a party and going, "Yes, if you could come dressed as Elon Musk's Hyperloop, please." Also, I've just realised Elon Musk's Hyperloop is absolutely a euphemism for his anus.
100%.
My final one, this is just a great who's who, again, of the 1920s. So Stravinsky put on a ballet, which you can't stop him. He's a bugger for a ballet, called Les Noches, I think it's pronounced, Wedding.
Oh, yes. This is the opening night party, is it?
Yeah. So again, same sort of time, the year before, 1923. Sarah and Gerald Murphy, who are friends of the Beaumonts, who will inevitably have been here, throw this lavish party for him and a who's who of the intellectual elite. And they announce that the party will be on July the 1st on a barge going down the River Seine. So it's a boat party!
Yes, I think we have talked about this in a past episode. I think we talked about this in our World's Worst Party guest episode with Mike Kaplan. But I have forgotten many of the details. Was Dali there? Am I imagining Salvador Dali was there?
Dali,
someone like that?
And Picasso was there, as far as I can
Picasso,
see.
Yes.
Yeah, Picasso's Dali wasn't, but you have incredibly talented chefs, obviously. Some of the friends include the entire troupe of the Ballet Russes, Pablo Picasso, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Cole Porter, and Jean Cocteau. So a veritable who's who. Now, Sarah Murphy wanted to decorate the barge with flowers, but the florists were closed on a Sunday. So instead, she bought loads of toys, fire trucks, dolls, clowns, stuffed animals, and toy trains. And Picasso took a lot of it and went, right, I'm just going to pile them all together into a giant mountain of stuff and put a toy cow on the very top of the fire truck ladder. So Picasso basically made the sort of sculpture that you'd expect from a toddler.
He just made Guernica, but in sculpture form.
Yeah, pretty much. The party went on all night. There was an artist there, Natalia Goncharova, who read people's palms. Cocteau got hammered and kept terrifying people, saying that the ship was sinking.
So sorry. Cocteau, turns out, is that dick at a house party.
Yeah. And my favourite bit is that the conductor, Ernest Ansermet, took down this huge laurel wreath that was there as decoration and got Igor Stravinsky, who was also hammered, to keep jumping through the hoop. And apparently Stravinsky said this was the greatest night of his life. So I love that Stravinsky was like a proper lad. So, is the end of our quick journey through the history of parties, advisable and otherwise. If you have a good party story that you'd like to share with us, do let us know. Maybe it may be a party that went right, maybe a party that went very, very wrong indeed. Do send those through to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to continue supporting us so we can make extra episodes like this, please do head to patreon.com/worstfootforward, where you can donate from as little as £2 a month all the way up to an entire monkey-faced NFT.
That's going to be our next party. Come as your favourite non-fungible token / cryptocurrency.
My aim for next month is to see if I can turn Barry into a non-fungible token. Until next month, party on, dudes.
Bye.